Our next presenter is Thea Murray, and she's going to present on the effect of HIV/AIDS education on risk behaviors among adolescents. Join me in welcoming Thea Murray.
Hi. I realize I still have my coat on, but I'm from Texas, and I'm slowly freezing to death, so... this project was completed at the University of Texas Health Science Center, University of North Texas Health Science Center, sorry, and it was completed with three of my classmates under the mentorship of Dr. Raquel Qualls-Hampton. I have no relationships, financial or otherwise, to disclose. And the purpose of this discussion is to provide a brief examination of HIV/AIDS education and risk behaviors as reported by the Youth Risk Behavior Surveillance System in 2011, and to also talk about its implications for future surveillance and HIV education. So this is just an overview. A lot of you may already know about the burden of HIV and AIDS in the U.S. An estimated 47,500 people were newly infected with HIV in 2010. And an estimated over 1.2 million people are currently living with HIV. The lifetime cost of treating HIV infection is approximately $355,000 per person. And this is just a pictograph kind of displaying that, courtesy of the CDC. And as you can see here, the trend for incident HIV infections is kind of stabilizing, but the number of people living with HIV is increasing. And I think that in the future, we'd kind of like to taper off that positive slope. So in response to this epidemic in 2010, the U.S. released the National HIV/AIDS Strategy, and their primary goal was to become a place where new HIV infections are rare, and regardless of a number of circumstances, those people will have unfettered access to high-quality, life-extending care free from stigma or discrimination. There were also three primary goals in this strategy. The first of those was reducing the number of people who become infected with HIV. There was also the goal of increasing access to care and reducing HIV-related health disparities. There's also the Healthy People 2020 objectives, which we've all heard about, and HIV was one of those priorities, and the three priorities there were reducing new HIV diagnoses, reducing incident infections among adolescents and adults, and reducing the rate of transmission among adolescents and adults. And so today, sorry, we're going to be looking at measures that have been taken or interventions that have been taken to reduce incident infections among adolescents. And there are four primary intervention approaches that have been used to reduce incident infections, and that's abstinence, HIV testing, promoting condom availability, and increasing access to sterile needles and syringes. We're looking at condom availability and abstinence. And our primary research question was, does exposure to HIV/AIDS education decrease the average age of sexual initiation or of unprotected sex in adolescents? Just a quick overview of the Youth Risk Behavior Surveillance System. It's a biennial national school-based survey, and the data collected is based on the leading causes of death, disability, and social problems among youth and young adults. And they monitor six categories of health risk behaviors in youth and young adults, and the health risk behavior that we're looking at are sexual behaviors that contribute to unintended pregnancy and STDs, including HIV infection. So our three primary survey questions that we looked at were, how old were you when you had sexual intercourse for the first time? The last time you had sexual intercourse, did you or your partner use a condom? And have you ever been taught about AIDS or HIV infection in school? And this just shows the trend over the past 20 years of administration of the YRBS in percentages of high school adolescents reporting ever having sex. And here you can see that the trend seemed to be decreasing and then tapering off in about 2001. When this trend was fitted to a model, it was found that the p-value was not significant. And this is looking at the trend in condom usage for the past 20 years. And also the percentage of adolescents using condoms seemed to be increasing and tapering off in 2003. When this trend was fitted to a model, the p-value was also not found to be significant. And this third graph depicts trends in HIV and AIDS education. These are the students reporting ever having received HIV AIDS education. And when this trend was fitted to a model, the p-value was found to not be significant. So this is just an overview of prevalence of the 2011 YRBS. And this is the average age in years of sexual initiation broken down by race and ethnicity. The overall average age of sexual initiation was 14.4 years old. And I have Black and African American and Native Hawaiian groups underlined because they have the youngest age, average age of sexual initiation. This is an overall prevalence of condom use broken down by gender. And 42.6% of females reported not having used a condom during last intercourse. Lastly, this is the prevalence of students reporting not having received HIV or AIDS education, broken down by race and ethnicity, and approximately 25% of Hispanic and Latino adolescent high school students reported not having received HIV or AIDS education. So in summary, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islanders, and African American adolescents are identified as a risk group for early age of sexual initiation. Female adolescents are identified as a risk group for not using condoms, and Hispanic adolescents are identified as a risk group for not having received HIV or AIDS education. So next, we did some hypothesis testing and performed multiple linear regression on age of sexual initiation versus HIV education. The variables chosen within this model were age of student, was HIV education received, were alcohol or drugs used before intercourse, and race and ethnicity. And these other values are variables outside of HIV education were included because they were known to be confounders for age of sexual initiation. And the points of note to look at here were the coefficient for B or beta, and that's 0.217. And that essentially says that if a student reports, yes, I've received HIV AIDS education, then they have about a 0.217 increase in their average age of sexual initiation. So what does that actually mean? Adolescents with HIV education were between 2 to 3 months older at age of sexual initiation than those who did not have HIV education. So next, logistic regression was conducted using condom use versus HIV education. And again, we have the same variables in the model. And the point of note here is to look at the EXPB, which essentially is the odds. And if we're looking at HIV education, you can see EXPB is equal to 1.144, which would translate to there's a 14.4% greater odds of having used a condom with students who received HIV education. But also when you look here at this model, the significance is 0.109, which does not meet the cutoff of 0.05 for our p-values. So the results here are that HIV AIDS education is associated with later sexual initiation by about 2.6 months. HIV AIDS education may or may not be associated with an increase of odds of condom use of about 14%. So the question is, why isn't HIV AIDS education more effective? Limitations of this data are, of course, that it's self-reported. Again, these are sensitive topics, so there's going to be some reporting bias among adolescents. It also includes only youth in school and some alternative settings, so we might be missing out on some major risk groups among youth. It cannot be used to evaluate specific interventions. You cannot, of course, demonstrate causality in survey data. You don't know which came first, sexual initiation or the HIV/AIDS education. And then the kind of intervention is not recorded, so we don't have delineation of whether this education was abstinence-only education or any other form. It may be also appropriate to use other variables in the survey as further potential confounders, such as whether there is a history of abuse with these adolescents. So why would I present to you a lot of findings that don't give you any answers? How can we use surveillance systems to gain awareness and examine the status of current public health interventions and ignite the discussion about improvement? So essentially, we don't know about a problem until you know that there's a problem, right? You don't know that you have a problem until you look and you find, well, something's not right here. There's sort of a discrepancy. And the only reason we know that there's a problem in existence is because we have surveillance systems to illustrate this problem for us. We've had these HIV and AIDS and sex education interventions in place for over 20 years. And it's only because of these surveillance systems that we can actually analyze whether we need to improve what's already in place. And I think that's probably a pertinent and important discussion to start having. So future directions for this are which interventions are most effective and for whom. The YRBS could include the kind of HIV education intervention used at that school, so maybe we could analyze that a little further. Also, we want to know more about how to change general attitudes among adolescents, what influences their sexual behaviors, and how do they deal with social and peer pressures. And at the policy level, how do we ensure the adoption of effective, evidence-based educational interventions? And this is just a quote that I took from the National HIV/AIDS Strategy, and I think that a lot of times we're looking for a single solution to fix a big problem, and in society that's not always the key. I mean, it's not like polio where you can send vaccinations all over the world and hope to eradicate it. Our prevention really has to be multi-tiered and comprehensive and overlapping in order for us to see any really significant decreases in the incidence of HIV infections in this nation. So I'd like to give special thanks to UNT Health Science Center and Dr. Hampton for her mentorship on this project, and also Texas Tech University Health Science Center and Dr. Lara Johnson for their support. And any questions? Yes.
Hi.
Hi. Sure. Yeah, that would be great to include. Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, thank you. Any other questions? Okay, well, thank you very much.
We actually were just talking about that a couple of days ago. So oral HPV is actually higher in men. And the reason we focused it on women was more because the HPV vaccines were being much more focused to women, so we thought it was timely to look at it in women. But it certainly should be replicated in men, see if self-inoculation is an important variable for men, and also, you know, different oral sexual behaviors as well.
Yeah. I'll the second presenter. You presented here as a study as it was, the results were surprising, but isn't everything that we've learned over the last 40 years looking at smoking or dietary change or getting people to exercise, is that education doesn't lead to any, by itself doesn't lead to any change. So why would you expect that AIDS education would lead to significant change?
Well, and I think, you won't come to the mic. Sure. Did everybody hear the question? Does she need to be
they're recording it.
Yes, and I think that may be kind of a cynical point of view to assume that educating the public won't lead to any changes. I think that in the past 20 years, we've seen huge decreases in smoking, for example, because of public education and because of huge ad campaigns that kind of that told us the truth about smoking. Also, I think that a lot of studies have been published regarding health literacy and the fact that health literacy strongly correlates to health outcomes. When people know about their health choices, when people know about the status of themselves, I guess, and their options as far as treatments and diagnoses, and they understand their condition, then they make more informed health decisions. Does that answer your question?
Well, it's very hopeful. I mean, I would disagree with you about the smoking and everything else, but I think there's a kind of naivete about the value of education in itself. If anything, smoking was reduced because taxation and restrictions on smoking that were reinforced by education. But to think that education itself would have much of an effect, I don't think, let's say, we're doing dietary change or something. People know that fast food has no calories, doesn't seem to influence. We know, for example, that you put up all the signs about how many calories, it has very minimal effect on people who use fast food. So education is really quite limited by itself.
But we also know that people who make unhealthy food choices may be limited in their food choices in general. That's why we have these new terms such as food deserts, you know, coming out, because sometimes these people just don't have choices, and that's actually what affects their health.
Right.
So I guess I am kind of an optimist.
Thanks.
So my question is,
don't make me do it.
I have a couple of questions about the confounders of condom use, whether they were using, they were doing oral sex, but it was protected oral sex. So what's protected in there or unprotected in there in your question?
We didn't.
So in the last year, have you had unprotected oral sex?
No, sir. That... is a good, that's a good point. We did not ask if people were having unprotected or protected. You know, that's actually not a very well documented area. So I don't want to assume anything, but my personal belief might be that is very low of, you know, people probably don't protect their oral sexual behavior
a whole lot. And the other question was, did you know whether people were all your HPV cases were, or participants, were they, their vaccination status, have they been previously vaccinated? I didn't know that.
Yeah, so we actually had a question right on point with what you're talking about. We did ask if people had been vaccinated for HPV, and we asked, you know, how many doses they had and how many were completed. And I didn't include that in this project because they have oral HPV, and it sort of would have taken it to a different direction. So, but we can't assume that those who had one vaccination were completely protected, right? So it's certainly something to look further into. But for this project, I didn't include that as part of the model.
The vaccination wasn't really teased out.
No, it was not.
Now, I mean, 50% of the girls had been vaccinated, and it was not a statistically significant predictor for HPV, but none of the girls that had been vaccinated had any of the four subtypes that are in the vaccine. So, can't prove that it was effective, but none of them had Well, let's hope it works, right?
Natalie, I have a question for you about the recruitment. You said it was in or around the mm-hmm. health center.
Yes.
Okay, so tell me more about
Either people were being recruited as they were receiving some kind of student health, but we also set up shop outside of the building. So, women could pass through as they were walking to class to see what this study's all about, see if they want to participate. You know, they could go home and participate and just give us the oral swabs at the time. If it was just at the Student Health Center, I'd say these are very health-conscious women and pretty biased. But it was also outside of the building itself, not just outside of the clinic area, but outside of the building. So, that's a little bit better, right?
So did you give them a link that they just went home and got on the mm-hmm. Saturday Monday to participate?
Yes, ma'am.
Other questions? Okay, so for both of you, if you had to do the study again, how would you do it differently from what you've learned on your study? Do you want to go first?
I definitely liked the input that this ma'am had earlier about the incorporation of other data sets, longitudinal data sets that involved motivations for risk behaviors. I think that would be a good further step to look into, and if I had known, I would have looked into that in the first place.
I personally probably would have wanted to recruit some males, see what their behaviors, oral sexual behaviors were like, and if this self-inoculation construct applied to them as well.
Okay, other questions? Madalia, John, okay, well, thank you everybody for coming, and please join me in thanking our two presenters.